online shopping upended the retail world.
People don't like to go to stores. The idea of a store in and of itself isn't relevant anymore.
The U.S. could face over 1 billion square feet of empty retail space in the next 5-10 years.
That caused a lot of retailers to question their footprint. You know, how many stores they had? Do they really need that many stores?
Brands like Payless have closed over 400 stores. JCPenney's closed 140.
It made retailers question the traditional way that they were valuing the space, which is sales per square foot.
Retailers and their landlords are searching for solutions, and many experiments are taking place, especially with experience retail.
Experience retail is something that is relatively online or e-commerce or Amazon proof.
Is it a showroom? Is it a small store? Is it a large store where I want to create a crazy experience?
Time is the new currency, but I will get you here if I can offer you a personal transformation, a moment of enlightenment, a second of aha.
Every brand is trying to figure out how they create a unique in-store experience called, you know, experiential. Everyone is focused on that word. This is what's attracting people to these stores, something that's beyond the transaction.
This is the future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal.
From the newsroom in New York, I'm Jennifer Strong, and this is the future of everything.
I'm Bart Higgins. I'm a partner at What If Innovation.
Higgins helps retailers deal with disruption. We're standing in the center of what was a Macy's in West Palm Beach, Florida.
It's your typical department store, right? It's full of stations for beauty, apparel, etc. The difference is this one is completely vacant.
I am in no way prepared for how strange this is. Malls are frenetic, and this is so empty.
Hello! Hello! It's an empty department store!
It's the weirdest feeling. There's a huge escalator right here, and there are all of these stations for brands like Estee Lauder and Lancome, Guess, but everything's empty. It's like they just closed up shop one day and everybody grabbed their stuff and ran out. When you walk or when you talk, all you hear is an echo, a feedback of the sound of emptiness.
This is not some relic of a distant past. It's a luxury shopping center called City Place that's less than 20 years old.
This big department store sat at the center of this big development and was the main draw. And now it's basically a big black eye. The world of retail is transforming. Places like this are no longer useful or desirable to consumers because they can get all this stuff in other places.
And these shifting habits have serious implications for the economy.
Credit Suisse just released a report that said 25% of shopping centers in America are going to close in the next 5 years. 25%.
That's 1 billion square feet of retail space.
It's 275 malls just like this mall that are going to go away in the next 5 years. And then when you think about the fact that 1 in 10 people in America work in places like this, that gets really scary. Then you start to think about the fact that most states, local governments, they derive a lot of their income from sales tax and from property taxes. So if you take 15% of that away, there's an economic crisis brewing in America. This is not something to think lightly about. This is a pretty big deal.
Analysts predict more than 8,600 stores will close their doors this year, which Higgins wrote about in the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything magazine. Landlords are scrambling to figure out how to fill these vacancies.
If you ask any broker that represents retailers or landlords in the heart of Manhattan or in the middle of Akron, Ohio, the deal is changing. It used to be that the landlord was in control. Now the retailer's in control.
So what do you do if you're the landlord of this giant empty space?
Well, you can wipe it off the face of the map and pretend that it was never here. Try to find retailers to come and fill this void. But developers are realizing that those retailers aren't going to materialize. They're actually going to be less and less of them. The smart money is repositioning places like this as cultural anchors.
As we chat, a sound designer starts to work upstairs.
He's going to take all of these empty spaces, he's going to take these empty fixtures and these empty Michael Kors signs, and he's going to put sounds behind them. So as you walk through here, this place will be an unfolding soundscape. an art installation. Not a place to buy things, but a place to experience art.
It's hard to say what will be here a year from now. Retail real estate is a fast-moving landscape, even in New York City.
Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, last year, between 42nd and 49th Street, it's kind of the heart of where it's all going on, had a 31% vacancy rate. You hear about that in major periods of recession, but we're not in a major period of recession. Our economy is doing quite well. What's happening is that retail is contracting.
It's not just about retailers and brands. It's also a story about the physical space they occupy, and the folks moving into these spaces aren't necessarily the ones you'd expect. Even in New York's Times Square, retail rents are down, vacancies are up, and brands are trying to reimagine what it means to be a store.
I am Danny Bookvar, president of the NFL Experience.
This store is as much a place to have a beer as it is to buy a sweatshirt.
So we're in the middle of Times Square, in the glory of Times Square. It's the center of the universe. From what I'm told, it's 300,000 people a day go by here.
He's opening a giant store on this corner called the NFL Experience.
Big buses going by and double-decker sightseeing business is a really important business in tour and travel.
Location matters. At this store, customers are paying for a place to spend their time.
Think Hall of Fame meets Disney meets Dave & Buster's with a liquor license on Times Square.
Inside, it's still a construction site, but what they're planning on selling you here is the NFL brand. He leads us to where folks are putting the final touches on a 4D theater, where visitors will sit down to watch larger-than-life football highlights projected on three walls.
Likely here we may be starting to smell hot dog smell.
Smells are part of the 4D experience.
We have these aroma cartridges. I mean, you pick the smell, all you need to do is buy an aroma machine, and then you test it, and you think this is supposed to smell like cut grass, and this is supposed to smell like, you know, gunpowder. But it doesn't all smell like the label says, and so the sniffing exercise is pretty hysterical.
The theater's seats move as players tackle each other, and at a certain point, there's artificial snow falling from the ceiling.
There are different ways to replicate snow, and you want to do it in a way that protects both the chairs and everybody's jackets.
The snow and other effects are managed by one of the partners in this venture, Cirque du Soleil.
From a business standpoint, remember, this is a joint venture between Cirque du Soleil, NFL, MGM, AEG, and the Witkoff Group.
Although the NFL and Cirque du Soleil would seem unlikely partners.
What Cirque brings to this party is the special effects. Once we created magic with the NFL, for Cirque to be able to work out the projection, the sound, the smell.
Listen to me. This is a grind. And you can't give up the ball. You can't miss tackles. You can't have penalties. You can't beat.
Next up is the equipment room, where visitors can experience what it's like to play for their favorite team. And that means putting on gear at an interactive suit-up station. Think of it as a virtual dressing room that uses skeletal mapping, a technology that goes further than CGI or computer-generated imagery.
What we're doing different here is we're not trying to create an avatar that tracks your movement. This is your face. And so that skeletal mapping, keeping your body in the uniform with your face, is actually pretty hard.
Then it's time to learn the play.
John Gruden, a famous coach, is going to come across that screen as a hologram, a hologram-esque type figure. He is going to teach you a play, and this is going to feel like the coach's classroom. The play is Dice Right, 61 Bullseye, X Individual.
From there, we head into the team huddle. In this case, 11 screens you have to lean in to view.
And then as the player, with Gruden screaming in your ear to call the play, and then to pick the wide receiver or the tight end, you have to then choose which one. Gruden, if you miss, he calls you a rookie. And if you make it, he screams, good job!
And the stress of being in the huddle is not to be underestimated.
There was a woman who had clearly never called a football play. Walked up and said, Dice Right, 61 Bullseye. And her 13-year-old son screams, Mommy, you gotta scream it! And then she had to scream, Dice Right, 61 Bullseye, X Individual. And then huddle broke. And like that magical moment of everyone here just screaming to play. And then the rest is, oh my God, how do I read a defense? How do I decide where the tight end? And that's what a quarterback goes through. We're gonna give you a taste of that.
There's even an opportunity for a touchdown dance.
And the select few we plan to broadcast on our billboard in Times Square. And then you can purchase that touchdown dance.
The goal is to get visitors to post these souvenirs on social media and then talk about the experience with their friends, perhaps the most effective brand marketing there is.
I'm Keiko Morris. I cover commercial real estate for the Wall Street Journal. You've got folks that are using it purely as marketing and hoping that you'll come in and have a sense of good feeling and community and somehow, I guess, attach it to the brand. And then there are folks that are mixing those two things together. So having some sort of food, entertainment, a bar, as well as selling things. Department stores in the past have done some of those things, right? They're not alien to retail. But I feel like now those things are really amplified.
And variations of this experience retail concept are cropping up all over the country.
Definitely that's not what I expect when I go into a retail space. But I think that that's where we are at this point in time with how people are experimenting and trying to feel their way through it. Experience retail is something that is relatively online or e-commerce or Amazon proof.
She shows me another version of this in a storefront a few blocks down from the NFL. It's called National Geographic Encounter.
Close your eyes as the sounds of sea creatures swirl around you.
Scientists and designers spent years crafting this experience. Today, it's Ocean Odyssey, but in future, it could be about outer space. The setup is flexible by design. Still, others are taking this several steps further.
Hi, my name is Zach Overton. I'm Vice President of Consumer Experience and General Manager of Samsung A37.
It's a store, but one with nothing for sale, which brings experience retail to a whole new level. It's in the Meatpacking District of New York City.
Experience retail is moving away from the traditional brick and mortar that's focused on transaction, getting a product in your hands and a credit card out, to interacting with the consumer, creating a real authentic connection with a consumer so that they have their own aha moment about how whatever it is that you're selling will impact their daily life.
When you enter the store, you're handed a Samsung device and it leads you on a tour.
There's a progress tracker, so as you go through different experiences, you use the camera and a QR code outside the experience to mark that you've actually completed that experience and then unlock a prize to encourage that sense of self-exploration throughout the space in a way that gamifies the experience.
This store defines itself as a place to play.
What we've seen from that is people are generally spending between 30 and 90 minutes within the space. We're seeing that 3 out of 4 people that have attend one of our programs will post something about it on social and therefore become organic brand ambassadors for us.
There's a full schedule of activities, exercise classes, cooking demonstrations, live DJs and concerts, all of which are free.
So it's built to be very modular, depending on what day of the week you come in, depending on what programming we have going on, what cultural moments are going on, the space can look and feel quite differently, and the experiences that you can enjoy differ quite widely as well.
That screaming is the sound of customers experiencing virtual reality. Another opportunity for Samsung to showcase its gadgets.
This is a futuristic flight through the galaxy where you're battling with evil robots. Over here in the window front, this is Air Show. So this is probably the most immersive and adrenaline-pumping experience that we have. You sit in a fighter pilot-type chair that spins you completely 360, upside down, left, right, and center, as you're experiencing an air show. And then one of my favorites is here in the back is our 4D surf experience. So what you're seeing here is surfboards that are mounted on a moving panel, leveraging our screens as a backdrop so that you get a sense of the waves that are crashing around you. And you put on the VR headset and get to experience what it feels like to surf through Tahiti.
Samsung is betting the best way to sell you on their brand is by creating memorable experiences, and that extends to customer service.
We've launched a new product called Care My Way, which basically means we'll come to you wherever you are, your office, your home, a Starbucks, and provide guerrilla-style care wherever you need it.
Samsung A37 also serves as the marketing team's innovation lab.
It is by design that our marketing offices sit on top of this space. We use this to test experiences, to test out product features and see what's really resonating, and then we can iterate off of those findings in real time.
But how do you know if this experience retail gamble is working?
We do see that it does drive referral purchases. We do a great deal of quantitative and qualitative research on what the experience is like for people. We measure people before they come in the space and then their thoughts on the brand and the products and understanding of the ecosystem, purchase intent, all of those things when they leave the space to show what those lifts are.
Not all of this is new, and to some, the word experience has become a catch-all.
That word, by the way, is way overused. My name is Kenneth Himmel, and I am the president and CEO of Related Urban.
Related is one of the nation's large real estate developers. Himmel recalls a time not so long ago when he says experimentation was discouraged.
It was a model. It was a shopping mall model. So the stock market and investor relations community would penalize you if you veered from the mall model. Well, guess what? If you stay with that model, you're going to be out of business.
And he says he's been working on these types of projects since the 70s.
When I was on the opening team at Water Tower Place in Chicago, which was a mixed-use project, vertical, with a seven-level shopping center and a hotel lobby on the eighth floor, the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, and residences and office space, all mixed use, all in one block. I love it when, you know, everybody's talking about this great new idea.
The Time Warner Center in New York's Columbus Circle is also one of his projects.
Whole Foods, lower level, Equinox, lower level, Mandarin Oriental Hotel, traditional bridge and upper level retailing, broad reach retailing, Samsung store that we opened with, now we've got Amazon Books, restaurants on level 3 and 4. People today are talking about that kind of program like it's futuristic. I mean, we conceived this 15 to 20 years ago and did it, and it's worked successfully here very well.
But as this trend toward a less cookie-cutter and more curated retail experience continues, something just about everyone agrees on is that the brands to watch are the ones found in smaller, less obvious places.
The winners in this, I think, are going to be the local brands.
Retail strategist Bart Higgins.
The small boutiques, the really interesting places that are representations of local culture, of unique perspectives on the world. Those unique places ultimately stand to benefit a lot from this transition. They can take back what they lost from these big brands 20 and 30 years ago.
Retailers like perhaps this one.
My name is Joanne Kwong. I'm president of Pearl River Mart, the longtime New York City Asian Emporium.
It's a New York staple for Asian-inspired trinkets, but customers don't just go there to shop. The store also hosts performances, culinary events, even a rotating gallery of local art. In other words, experience retail. Kwong's father-in-law, Ming Yi Chen, opened Pearl River in 1971 when the U.S. and China did not have diplomatic relations and there was a trade embargo.
And Mr. Chen's thought was simple. It was to create this store where people, neighbors, community in New York City could see that Chinese stuff was pretty cool and the food was good. And there were a lot of really valuable things for cultures to share.
Getting Chinese goods in those days was no simple task.
He made friends with the longshoremen. He also drove maybe twice a week, 20 hours round trip to Canada. But he did it because he was really passionate about this. He felt like he was making a difference.
Fast forward 2 decades, Pearl River found its way into the tastemaker scene.
I think it was the 90s where really kind of the fashion world put it on the map because there were editors from Vogue or 17 who would come and they would mine all of the baskets for brocade slippers or kung fu shoes or accessories or jade bracelets. And that was where they found treasure that was different.
But with rising retail rents, no amount of success was enough to afford the luxury of staying put.
The rent increase that came was 5 times the rent. So the rent went from about $1 million a year to $6 million.
At that point, the family might have called it quits. But had they done so, they would have missed out on this next moment, when you might say the retail scene came full circle.
Somebody from Chelsea Market came to the store and was like, oh, excuse me, I've left a couple of messages, and I wanted to talk to the owners because we're interested in having you open at Chelsea Market. It's the number one food market in the nation and very curated. You can find any type of cuisine there, and it's just an exciting and fun place to be.
It's a market full of unique shops with things you can't really find online.
There's a lot of stories that are out there about the end of brick-and-mortar retail, but the ones that are actually doing pretty well are the retailers who, over the years, have been personalizing their service, been carefully curating their goods, and creating a reason to get off the couch, get off your laptop, and actually come into a store.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. The show is produced by Laura Sim and Martha C. Daniel. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from Bart Higgins, The Wall Street Journal's Keiko Morris, Larry Root, Jennifer Hicks, and Mike Miller. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong from the Newsroom in New York.